Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hi there, and thanks a lot for joining me again today. I really do appreciate it. Hope you're having a great weekend. Lots to talk about coming up, including a closer look at the FDA and CDC giving official approval to those new variant-specific COVID boosters. We'll also hear about a new COVID vaccine trial underway at St. Louis University School of Medicine. And we'll talk about opioid and fentanyl use in the St. Louis area. But first, let's start the show the way we always do with our co-host, Dr. Fred Buchold. Dr. Buchold is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health, St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchold, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Oh, Fred, it's always my pleasure.
At the end of the week, the CDC has officially recommended updated COVID-19 boosters. Tell us about them.
Yeah, I think, Fred, we've been alluding to this the last month or so. As you know, I think this is pretty expected as we kind of go into the fall and winter months of you know, some kind of recommendation of who and what, how the booster might manifest. And you know, the simple story is this: I think, one, if you haven't gotten your vaccine yet, you know, you need to, or at least I would recommend you get the two shots 3 weeks apart, the kind of what we call the primary vaccination. So you know, I definitely suggest that for the adult population. And then, regardless of your previous booster status, whether or not you've got one or not, is basically if you've had that primary series, getting a shot going into the fall, winter months, and the recommendations are for, again, those same Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, you know, a recommendation for that. We've talked before, Fred, just kind of an interesting thing, and if you want to know my, this is not really based on science, but just kind of a thinking, and I've had this discussion with a couple of colleagues, and you know, I think at least just to show where our minds are at, what we're considering is we've talked about this Novartis vaccine, and I'd like to see, you know, see that's a possibility for patients that maybe have gotten 3 or 4 RNA vaccines. You know, what does doing a vaccine that has a slightly different strategy as a boost do? And I'd be interested in that kind of information and to consider that as an option or alternative. I think it's an easier sell for patients to, you know, instead of getting the RNA vaccine to get something different. I still think the RNA vaccines are probably very safe, but where all these recommendations the CDC is making, they're making it without, you know, studies in humans. They've done some studies in mice and shown it's effective. The human studies are coming, but they're just not out in time. I think the CDC is just trying to get ahead of things, which I completely understand. We're in a large gray area, I guess, and I think that's just something worth noting and thinking about.
We'll talk some more about these new boosters later on in the show. But for now, let's move on to U.S. life expectancy. A new study finds that life expectancy is at its lowest in decades after dropping nearly a year in 2021. Dr. Buchold, what's going on?
Well, I mean, life expectancy is really taking into account the amount of people that are alive and how many have died and kind of extrapolating that out in the future. And, you know, Fred, in the last 2 years, we've had 1 million people in the United States die, you know, kind of not for the reason that you expect them to die from. I always tell, you know, students and residents and anybody that's listening is the number one and number two causes of death in the United States are heart disease and cancer, and in no specific order. It kind of has been flipping the last couple of years. But add to that, now you had a cause of death that you know, was kind of a good number three, if not a number one, the last 2 years, and that changes the math. There's just less people alive that can kind of, make, you have a number of people that died prematurely from a disease that we didn't anticipate, and that's reflected in the life expectancy statistics. Just to kind of put out the obvious, I'm talking about COVID with that. I guess I haven't been clear on that. I think the other important piece with this that is still, in my mind, incredibly troubling is, we have 100,000 deaths in the last year from, or at least suspected from, opioid misuse. So either overdoses or some kind of other complication related to opioid use, which is a stunning number by itself, frankly. And I think that's also a massive contributor, because that does tend to affect people that are otherwise fairly healthy, that I would say younger, but not at advanced age. And that's a big contributor to that too. And another massive long-term public health problem that we've made some small steps of addressing, but not enough.
We're talking with Dr. Fred Buchholz, a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Dr. Buchholz, let's talk a little bit about medications for the next segment. Is there a best time of day to take your blood pressure pill?
Well, the short answer is probably not. There's a new set of information released that's being announced at a conference in Europe that is try to answer that question and say, it doesn't matter what time you take it. And, long story short, it doesn't really show much effect on kind of the endpoint outcomes of hypertension. So again, just to take a step back, Fred, I think just to make things clear is, one, when I treat hypertension or high blood pressure, yes, I want to pay attention to what the medications I use to treat it do, in the sense, does it effectively lower blood pressure? Because if we do that the right way, we reduce the kind of the end products of longstanding hypertension, which is heart disease, kidney disease, hospitalizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this study aimed to look at those things, how many people die of heart disease or hospitalized related to heart disease, and, depending on when they take their medication. And long story short, there's no difference. I will say, with a couple of caveats, it's probably dependent on a couple of different variables in terms of what time is best. Not so much from the stance of reducing your blood pressure per se, or reducing your chance of having a heart attack, but, one commonly prescribed class of drugs has a side effect of making you pee more. And so, to me, I think giving that during the day rather than at night, so you're not up half the night going to the bathroom, improves adherence to the medication and makes it a little bit more easier for somebody to take. There's other medications that may have fatigue as a side effect, and so therefore taking those at night may make them easier to tolerate, because you're already asleep and then you're not feeling fatigued during the day, where you take that medicine in the morning. So the short answer is it still, in my mind, depends more about side effects and adherence rather than the time of day, just from those like long-standing outcomes. Because if you're not taking the medicine, it doesn't do anything. And if you're having side effects and you stop the medicine, that kind of goes against the point in the first place. So from a long-term outcome, it doesn't matter. But I think for getting people to take them and helping them out so they don't have to deal with the side effects is, I think, still a good strategy.
Another medication question for you, Dr. Buchholz, and this one involves statins. And I know that's one of your favorite things to talk about. A new study finds that many patients stop taking statins because of muscle pain, but statins really aren't the cause of the pain. What do you think?
Well, yeah, so I'll try to go on a smaller rant on statins, Fred, than I did last week. But long story short is that this was not a new study, but a kind of a compendium of all the studies that have been out there, kind of reanalyzing that data and trying to see what truly is the rate of muscle pains related to taking statins from those studies. It was well done, and the conclusions they took is that the rates are probably much less than what has been described in other pieces of literature, which I think is true. But their conclusion was basically 1 in 10 to 15 patients who take a statin will develop some muscle pains as a result of the statin. And there's other reports that show that number may be a little bit higher. One kind of caveat when you look at this type of information, it's, to be fair to them, it's some of the best analysis and best information that they have to really answer this question. But they're doing it from trials where you're looking at a group of patients that tend to be the type of patients that volunteer for trials, and that is not necessarily descriptive of the population as a whole. And I won't go into the details of that, but it helps us make good conclusions, but it doesn't mean the conclusions are 100% accurate. So you know, we're probably somewhere in the balance in the middle of, like, it's probably a little more common than we think, but not as common as some claim. I will say, like, I often see patients. In fact, I saw one this week, Fred, that you know, had some kind of muscle pain that wasn't really related to exercise or use or anything else. And what I often do is just say, I don't say stop the statin, but my experience has been, give yourself a holiday. So if you don't take it for a month, you know, long term, that's not going to have a lot of massive consequences for your overall health. But just gives your body a break from it, and then you can actually restart the same drug at the same dose, and most people do okay. So I think when people come to my office and talk about muscle aches and pains, you know, trying to get a good idea of what's going on is often challenging, and there's a lot of things we don't really well explain. But to me, I think it's a very reasonable thing just to, you know, rather than add stuff on or, you know, add more medications or do a lot of stuff, the logic of withdrawal makes a lot of sense and just see how people feel. And the magic with that, Fred, on top of that, is the placebo effect, which is incredibly helpful. It may do something without really doing something, and that is a common doctor trick. And this is a hard problem to figure out. And I think on the front lines, when you're just taking care of patients, you're still going to have to kind of make some blind stabs in the dark, unfortunately, when it comes to statins. And then last point, like I was saying last week, I think if you're on a statin, that's providing you a lot of benefit. And I think there's a small number of drugs, Fred, that I really bend over backwards to keep patients on once I realize or think that they need to be on them. And statin is definitely one of them. So I try to give people that break or pause, thinking more long-term than short-term. And I think that's a smart strategy when it comes to this type of medication.
Dr. Buchholz, once again, thanks a lot for all your time. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Fred. Like I said, statins are my bailiwick, so I try to keep it short. But
I can tell.
It's a fascinating thing.
All right, talk to you next week.
All right, Fred, thank you.
Dr. Fred Buchholz is a SLU care general internist at SSM Health St. Louis University Hospital. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll get some more information about those new variant-specific COVID boosters. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
Both the FDA and the CDC have given their blessing to new Omicron-targeting coronavirus booster shots. Here to talk with us about that is Dr. John Lakamp. Dr. Lakamp is the Chief Pharmacy Officer for Mercy Health. Dr. Lakamp, thanks a lot for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So tell us more about these two newly approved variant-specific COVID boosters.
So both the Moderna and the Pfizer versions, which are both mRNA vaccines, have basically, they were approved as new formulations. And these new formulations have basically protect an additional way, an additional variant for COVID. So whereas the previous vaccines that we had for COVID really had what we call a single antigen, these have two antigens, or they're called bivalent. So they have the original formulation, as well as a second component of the vaccine that actually protects specifically against the newer Omicron strains of BA4 and BA5.
And what are these boosters expected to do?
So they should have a much better coverage, offer more protection, specifically against the most common variants that we're seeing today. And so really by having a more tailored and broader footprint of protection, it's going to provide some additional protection against COVID and update the existing vaccine that we have to a more contemporary, a newer version that better aligns with the COVID variants we're seeing in the communities right now. So you think about it, it's very similar to what we do every year with flu. Each year, the flu vaccine is slightly different, and usually there's several different formulations. Today, normally four different products that are in a flu vaccine. So this basically is taking a page out of that book, and it has basically two components, two products that are in the vaccine now, as opposed to one. So it's placing us on a little bit more of a trajectory that's more similar to what we do with flu.
Does it concern you at all that these new updated boosters did not undergo any human clinical trials?
Actually, there have been several different iterations of trials that have gone on with this booster. So there's a very similar model that did go through the trials, and this basically just took a very small variant change to do that. So this is honestly, I'd feel very comfortable in receiving it. I'm actually planning on getting it as soon as I can. I actually did a lot of the original trials myself. I enrolled in some of the original COVID trials, but I wasn't able to get this one. So I'm looking forward to getting it myself as soon as it's available.
How many of these new updated doses are you ordering?
So really, Mercy has a footprint really across four states: Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. So obviously, there've been trying to really guess what is the right uptake. I think at this point, we've already placed orders for about 8,000 to 10,000 doses, and then we'll have the ability to order more if needed.
When will they become available?
So in Missouri, so far the state of Missouri has said that they're going to start accepting orders on September the 7th, and we'll be shipping as soon as possible after that. We've heard a slightly different, maybe a little bit sooner, feedback from Arkansas and Oklahoma and Kansas that they're going to be ready around that same time period, if not slightly sooner. So basically, obviously there's going to be, some logistical things that need to go into place. So I would anticipate that most locations would be ready to start administering by the, middle to, at the latest, around the 20th of September at the latest.
Who is eligible to get this booster?
We believe it will be anyone who's already received an initial series or booster so far will be eligible 2 months after their last dose. And this would include for Pfizer, those that are 12 and older, and for Moderna, those that are 18 and older. That's what we are planning on and believe will be the eligible population.
How will people be able to get the vaccine?
So it'll be similar to really the way that vaccine's been given in the past. So health systems, pharmacies, many folks will be actually administering it, the health department. And so obviously it really depends on, there's a lot of them have online registration. Many are allowing walk-ins. And so once that product is available, we anticipate that it will be pretty broadly available. And as long as folks are eligible, they can go in and start getting them.
So a difference between who's eligible and who should get it. Who do you think should get it?
Honestly, I think the two groups to me are very similar. Obviously, the more risk factors a patient has, I would encourage more so. But really, I would think anyone that is eligible should be getting them. So right now, again, those age groups, 12 and up or 18 and up. And then at some point, I would say within the next 2 months or so, it's likely that age group will be expanded by the FDA and CDC to some of the younger age groups as well in the October-November time period.
Are these boosters still covered by the government?
They are. So far, the U.S. government has purchased both the initial vaccine supply of COVID vaccines as well as these new boosters. It is likely that sometime next year those supplies will be exhausted. But for the time being, the vaccine is still being purchased and provided by the government free of charge.
So the prospect of having new updated boosters is welcome news to you?
Absolutely. So really, I think this is going to be great news for patients that we have an additional tool to help protect against COVID. We know that the vaccine has been very effective. We know that it's been very well tolerated. And this is going to be some additional rationale, additional reasons for folks to go out and get a booster now, with this new additional protection.
John, thanks a lot for your time. Anything else you want to add?
Just appreciate the time to be here today and just want to encourage everybody, once these are available to strongly consider it and move forward. So thank you very much.
Dr. John Lakamp is the Chief Pharmacy Officer for Mercy Health. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about a COVID-19 booster vaccine trial seeking vaccinated volunteers in the St. Louis area. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
St. Louis University researchers are looking for volunteers to take part in another COVID vaccine trial. Lead researcher Dr. Daniel Hoft heads up SLU's Center for Vaccine Development. Dr. Hoft, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Fred, for having me.
So tell us about this new trial.
So the trial that we're conducting is a trial of a novel type of COVID vaccine. There's actually a couple different types, and they are both the new wave types of vaccines that have made a big difference in the COVID pandemic. Both newer versions of messenger RNA vaccines, as well as newer types of recombinant adenovirus vaccines. What these vaccines do is they can induce neutralizing antibodies very similar to the licensed or authorized vaccines that we already have. But in addition, they include more sequences from the SARS-CoV-2 virus, much more actually, which again do induce similar neutralizing antibody responses, but are designed to be able to induce more of the other type of immune response that can be protective against viruses and other infections called T cells. And these T cells are a type of immune response that is not affected by the mutations that are happening within the spike protein that are causing all these variants to make us jump one step forward and then have to step back and make a new vaccine that updates with new sequences like the bivalent vaccines that are just coming out. So we think that these vaccines are already ready to be able to provide some protection against any new variant that comes down the pike because of their ability to induce T cells that would not be affected by the types of mutations that are affecting the standard vaccines.
Who are the makers of these vaccines?
The company is known as Gritstone Bio. They have a history of developing cancer-based T-cell targeting vaccines that have been very promising in the field of cancer vaccines. And during the pandemic, they just retooled themselves to make vaccines with some of the same vectors or delivery systems that they were using for their cancer vaccines. And so we're pretty excited about them. Key thing for people to know is that we basically have one more month to recruit people into this Gritstone trial. We're targeting the elderly populations to fill two more groups that would be able to look more carefully at the T-cell responses in the elderly, where we think the T-cells can be most protective. If interested, we would love for you to give us a call at 866-410-6333 or go to the website vaccine@slu.edu and go to the Gritstone link.
How does this Gritstone vaccine differ from the current vaccines on the market?
They have more parts of the virus within the vaccine than the licensed or approved ones. A lot of additional sequences from the virus that are not from the spike protein, but from other parts of the virus across the whole genome. And that's where we're finding these T cell epitopes, which are sequences that are able to induce protective T cells in people. So by having the spike sequence there to be able to induce the neutralizing antibodies and having all the rest of the sequence that's in these vaccines that's not in the other vaccines, these vaccines are designed to try to induce both the neutralizing antibody response and a protective T cell response.
How exciting is this for you?
I'm very excited about it. I think it's an important idea. It's something that can help us prevent immune escape by the virus continuing to evolve. And in general, T-cell vaccines have not been developed as much as the antibody-based vaccines, and we need to do a lot more for many other types of major global health problems with developing T-cell vaccines. So this is important for COVID, the pandemic, our current problem, but also for developing new strategies for protecting people against other things that have remained challenges.
What are you trying to determine in this phase of this trial?
We're trying to determine if these vaccines can induce as strong a neutralizing antibody response and add something new, immune responses in T cells that can also provide different types of protection. The difference between them, neutralizing antibodies, those are proteins that just float around in the bloodstream, can bind to a virus and block it from infecting a cell. That's how they work. The T cells they make a lot of proteins, but that's not how they protect in most cases. What they can do is see an infected cell and then be triggered to destroy that infected cell so that they cannot make new viral particles. So it's like a 1-2 punch, if you will, to have the neutralizing antibody response, but then a stronger, broader protective response mediated by T cells is what we hope to see.
And again, what do people need to do if they want to volunteer?
Please call 866-410-6333. That's our St. Louis University Vaccine Center main number. Or you can go to the website, which is simply vaccine@slu.edu.
How many people are you looking for?
We're looking for 17 more volunteers to complete this phase one stage of these vaccine trials.
And what should their current vaccine status be?
They need to have gotten a primary series as well as one booster, and they need to be over the age of 60.
Dr. Hoff, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Daniel Hoff is the director of St. Louis University's Center for Vaccine Development. Coming up next on Health Matters, we'll find out about opioid and fentanyl use in the St. Louis area. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. You're listening to Health Matters on KMOX.
Welcome back to Health Matters with Fred Bottomer on KMOX.
America's fentanyl crisis is definitely being felt here in the St. Louis area. Dr. Dustin Smith is a Mercy Health ER doc who specializes in addiction medication. He spoke earlier this week on KMOX's The Show with Kevin Wheeler and Chris Ranji.
As far as impacts on the community, both locally and across the state, fentanyl and opioids continue to have a heavy toll on both individuals, families, all across the state. So simply having this conversation and bringing it into the open to discuss more openly helps us to start working on solutions.
So we do hear the word fentanyl a lot. We hear about it, even if people haven't really dug into it deeply. What exactly is the danger here? Because this is one of those synthetic drugs that is more powerful than a lot of things that are out there.
You hit the nail on the head there. It all comes down to potency and availability. We look at drugs decades ago. They were more expensive. They were not as readily available, and they were not as potent. And so when you take a drug that has become cheaper, has become more readily available, secondary to mass production, and the potency, which we're seeing, which is much stronger than drugs that we've seen in the past, then that's where you get this horrible crisis that's causing so many people to be stuck in the cycle of addiction and families and communities that have been affected by overdose deaths.
So we know it's a problem nationwide. How big of a problem is it here?
It's probably more of a problem than we are even willing to acknowledge. Opioid addiction is one of those things that is just not, while some parts of our society are willing to acknowledge it and speak openly about it, there's still a significant stigma and shame that's brought on individuals and families who may be dealing with this. And that's where I welcome these opportunities to speak, simply so that individuals and loved ones who are dealing with this can feel comfortable speaking to their family members, their friends, or their medical team about the challenges that they're facing. Because no other aspect of medicine are individuals expected to try to cure their own disease. Diabetics, cancer patients don't go on the internet and try to come up with their own treatments and solutions. They seek out medical professionals. And that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to allow this topic to be discussed more openly so that we can destigmatize it, take away the shame, and allow individuals to have access to care and to find recovery.
What is the difference, Dr. Smith, when we're trying to figure out where this goes with fentanyl? What's the difference between the quote-unquote traditional opioids that have been abused and how that addiction progresses versus something like fentanyl?
It's a great question. It all comes down to severity of disease. So you look at somebody who may have been struggling with heroin or prescription opioids 10 to 15 years ago, and the rapid sort of treatment needs were not as prevalent back then. Patients had time. Families had time, but every single day that an individual is using or abusing fentanyl, there's a risk for them to potentially overdose and die. And the thing that we have to remember is that dead individuals don't recover. We have to give individuals an opportunity to seek treatment, and it has to be done rapidly. You can imagine today if you were ill and you called your physician and they said, yeah, we'll be happy to see you in 6 weeks. It would be absurd. You would need medications or support or treatment on that day. And what we see so often, there was just an article released here recently in St. Louis area speaking to when individuals reach out for resources, they often get no response or they have significant delays in engaging in treatment. And that's really the bar that we're trying to set higher as far as what treatment options are available and how quickly patients can access those when they are ready to receive treatment.
Dr. Dustin Smith is with us, an ER doctor with Mercy and also with the Mercy Substance Use Recovery Program.
The question now is, and probably the main question, at least for right now, is what do we do? First of all, what do we do on a very personal level if we think somebody is exposed, if we think somebody has the ability to acquire fentanyl, or is in danger of an overdose? Like, what are the immediate things that somebody around that person can do?
Well, if they are immediately experiencing signs of an overdose, I would definitely encourage them to call 911 or contact medical professionals. We have the wonderful law change in the past few years where Narcan is more available for the general public. So if you are living with an individual who's struggling with substance use or has used fentanyl in the past, having Narcan available in your home can potentially be the difference between life and death. We're talking about, you know, minutes when they are experiencing an overdose, and oftentimes our great EMS personnel in St. Louis can get there in time and provide life-saving treatments, but sometimes they just don't get there quick enough. And so if an individual is concerned, I would encourage them to either secure Narcan from a pharmacy, which they can do without a prescription, or they can go online to nomodeaths.org in order to secure free Narcan. Ultimately, we have to allow those individuals to have an opportunity to turn this disease process around. and ultimately just bringing up the topic. If you have a concern, rather than accusing, rather than threatening, I would encourage loved ones and individuals to reach out from a place of empathy and ask if an individual is suffering. They may not always be receptive to that, and you have to be prepared that the individual may not be excited about that acknowledgement. But some of them are looking for that opportunity to share what they're struggling with. And anyone who's listening who may be struggling with an opioid use disorder themselves, I would encourage them to speak to somebody that they love and care about and to try to seek out treatment. The most important thing about these conversations is acknowledging what's different than what we see in the media on occasion. So many of the patients that I'm taking care of are young moms who are offered pain medications after a C-section, or young men who are offered prescription pain medications after a trauma or surgery, just playing sports like so many of your listeners here in St. Louis. And so just destigmatizing what in somebody who is struggling with opioid use disorder looks like and why the need to access to care is so essential for not only them, but also to our community.
That's great advice. And in tying in with that, it's kind of a two-part question, Dr. Smith, but are there things that, you know, if you know someone is battling an addiction, or let's say, for example, you're a parent of a teenager or even a college-age student that did have the surgical procedure and were prescribed those things, what are the signs that there may be something to be concerned about if that person's not coming to you, if it's not outright obvious, or maybe it would be outright obvious if there's this is a significant problem? And how big of a problem do you think it is that now apparently there's some targeting of younger people with these brightly colored fentanyl pills? They're making it look like, they actually kind of look like in some of the pictures, like the old Flintstones vitamins. They look like little candies. How much of a concern should that be for parents?
So on your first question, you know, the signs that somebody may be struggling, if their behaviors are changing in some way, if you have an individual that was previously happy, healthy, successful, who's now struggling either in their career, struggling in their relationships, struggling in their education, if you make the connection that they were recently prescribed opioids or had been in the past and something seems off, again, it, coming from a place of accusation is not often received well. But just opening up that conversation from a place of concern may at least get the conversation started. In regards to the rainbow fentanyl or the colored pills, you know, we see often every, you know, 3 to 6 months, a significant headline will bring this topic into the public conversation. And I'm happy that that happens because we still have a long way to go for understanding the general public and access to treatment. The reality is I think education can help to overcome fear. The first thing I think about when I think about the, you know, these decorated pills and things like that, I think about, you know, music or party type scenes. Right. And unfortunately, in the past, again, we had young people or adults who were experimenting with drugs, and they did so in a way that they thought was safe. My concern is if these do make their way into those arenas, that, again, the potency for individuals who are otherwise not tolerant to opioids could be fairly devastating. Thankfully, that's relatively rare, but it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be addressed. Now, on the contrary argument, there's a healthy discussion on our Missouri opioid discussion page about whether these headlines are even accurate or if they just contribute to the stigma of those who are suffering with drug use. The reality is a large percentage of the patients that I take care of who are struggling with fentanyl, they are using what are called press pills, which are made to look like pharmaceutical grade pain medications or capsules of fentanyl. So I have not seen a lot of this.
Okay.
I should say I haven't seen any personally of the rainbow fentanyl in our area. It doesn't mean that the fentanyl that is in our area isn't still having a significant impact on our community.
Dr. Dustin Smith is an emergency room physician with Mercy Health, specializing in addiction medication. He was talking with KMOX's Kevin Wheeler and Chris Ranji. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. Thanks so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If there are parts of this show you want to hear again, please log on to KMOX.com and look under the podcast section. Or you can download the Odyssey app and favorite KMOX. This is KMOX Health Editor Fred Bottomer. Please join me again next week for another edition of Health Matters on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.